Have you guys ever tried explaining football to a little kid? It's almost impossible to make it make sense. I've got two kids myself, and they're always like, Dad, what's this thing on TV for your work? When can we watch some Paw Patrol? Well, meet Future Fans, an innovative brand that helps little kids become big fans by embedding the rules of football into parallel games and activities. The way they teach is super unique and effective. As an example, they have this beanbag toss game with four tries to teach downs in football. I tried it with my kids. They love it. And later they connect those games back to the sport itself through a storybook. Seriously, check out the reviews on this thing. They have 4.9 stars on Amazon. Imagine your kid asking to watch on Sundays with you or being right there alongside you for all the ups and downs with your favorite team. That's what dreams are made of right there. And Future Fans exists to make that a reality. If you want your kid to understand football, Future Fans is for you. And it's only $49.99 right now. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com to get 10% off and unlock a lifetime of memories starting now. That's $49.99. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast Super Bowl Review. Albert Breer's here. I'm finally home. That took a while.
You're like John Candy in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh my gosh. I left Vegas at 11 a.m. the morning after the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I flew to Indianapolis.
He left before I did, by the way.
Right.
You left before I did. You were gone before I left.
I've been doing this for 14 years, and this is the first time I used like a shady third party travel site named after a fruit. So I'm just saying. And so this place is like, oh yeah, we'll take care of everything.
Was that fruit? Could that fruit be found in like New Zealand or something?
Could be
Australia.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Could be like a fruit there, like it brown on the outside. You cut it open, it's green. Yeah. Yeah. Or there's a golden variety of it. But anyway. So this website's like, yeah, we're going to take care of everything for you. We hacked the system. Great. Okay, cool. So kept the fares down, which was good. Company's happy. And so they're like, okay, we're just going to put you on. It's just a connecting flight. Okay.
Yep.
So then I go to board for Vegas, and I get on a flight to Indianapolis, then Indianapolis to New Jersey. And they say, oh, by the way, you're checking bags? Okay, so when you get to Indianapolis, they're not going to just forward the bag to Newark, okay? You're going to have to get off that flight. You're going to have to go all the way down to the baggage claim, get that bag, check back in to the airport, go through security a second time, and then board the flight.
So you got, like, let's stop here, though. So you got to pay to check the bag again, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, you're already eating into your savings.
Correct. It costs way more. It cost way more. It costs so much more. Because do you know what a bag is on Spirit Airlines?
No, how much?
If you had to guess.
I would say they charge, well, don't they charge for overhead space on Spirit too?
I don't know, but so
I'm going to guess. All right, let me guess. 75.
More.
What?
$90
for one bag.
One bag, not even over the weight limit.
Yeah, I was gonna say like over the weight limit because the weight limit's usually 50, right?
Weight limit's 50, and now theirs was like 40, and mine was 37. I was under the weight limit, even at a decrease.
Okay. So my bag, I'll give a shout out to Southwest here. Southwest took my bag for free, right? And my bag was definitely over 50 pounds.
Golly.
And like Delta did too on the way there, but Delta I have status with, right? Like, so Delta, when you have status, generally you get those things for free. I don't have status with Southwest, and Southwest hooked me up. So, and you know, I think sometimes too, Connor, the key is going to the Sky Cab. and give them a grease in their palm a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like you give them the tip before. Like I slipped the guy a $5 bill, a big tipper over here. Slip the guy a $5 bill.
Who are you tipping?
The Sky Cab. You tip the Sky Cab. When you check your bag in with the Sky Cab in the curbside, you're supposed to tip them.
Oh, I never check in there. I take Why it not? into the kiosk and then I hand it to the
No. You want to go to the Sky Cab is like the hack.
What?
The Sky Cab is like the frequent traveler hack. Yes. There's never as long a line. You get out of your car, you're right freaking there. You don't have to deal with the line at the counter. They can actually, they can do almost anything they can do at the counter. Now, if you have to like sometimes it's annoying and you're like, I mean, this is like, I don't know. I know this is a first world problem, but sometimes like if your pre-check number didn't get put in or whatever, you know, like that might be a little more problematic, but you can do pretty much anything. You can change your seat with the Sky Cab. Yeah, you 100% go to the Sky Cab.
Oh,
you never do that?
God, no.
Shoot, Connor, you fly out of Newark. That's a big airport.
Dude, I fly
those lines,
a lot.
Those lines are usually, I mean, those lines at the counter are usually pretty long if you don't have status. And really, I only have status anymore on one airline. I only have status with Delta anymore. But yeah, I mean, use SkyCab. If you're going to check a bag, I would say use SkyCab as much as you can.
Damn. All right. Well, lesson learned.
There's never a line. I mean, there is sometimes. If the airport's like, if it's like, you know, Orlando or whatever, where there's like, I mean, going through baggage and security and all that in Orlando is like, I mean, that's like the seven circles of hell. I can't imagine there's a worse place on earth than like non-pre-check security at Orlando. I'll be that guy. It is because of the kids. And it's because of the kids with parents who don't travel that often. I mean, this is like a big thing for me. And I know I've vented on my travel situations in the past. I used to be really well known for it before I got US Air shut down. But like, is there anything more annoying as a frequent traveler than being behind the non-frequent traveler in security who doesn't know what they're doing?
No, it's bad.
You know what I mean? Like who waits till the very last minute to do absolutely everything.
That's frustrating. Although I can't, there are times when like, it's like anything else, right? You're having a bad game. You're having a bad day. I was so frazzled by the point in time that I got to the flight where I actually got home that I still had all my stuff in my pocket. I still had my belt on. Like all that stuff. And so I was that guy this week. And so I try to remember that, like, I'm not like George Clooney in Up in the Air. You know what I mean? I'm not like, I don't have the slip off shoes and the, you know, I don't have that as smoothly as everybody else does, you know?
I mean, but there are certain things that, like, you know, I have a pair of Birkenstocks that I know set off security every time, right? Because the buckles on them. So if I'm traveling in the summer with those, I will always send those through the, like, even like in pre-check, you know, you don't have to take them off. I'll take them off. Just being considerate of other people, I think. You know what I mean? Because there are other people like me that get annoyed by these things. You got to keep the process moving, Connor.
Exactly. So,
I mean, you don't need to be George Clooney and Up in the Air, but like you have to be making, I feel like common courtesy to other travelers is to keep the process moving. Like,
for sure.
When I have my kids with me, I keep the process moving. I'm like General Patton getting them through security.
So it ended up being, I flew to Indianapolis. Yep. Because of this asinine travel site. Mm-hmm. My connecting flight to Newark got canceled. And so because I had to run down the stairs to get my bag off of baggage and then check back into security, on my way back into security, I learned that the only other available flight to Newark I had just missed. I had missed it because I have to do that. So here we are back at the Courtyard Indianapolis Marriott. I rewatched the Super Bowl because there's nothing else you can do at that point besides rewatch the halftime show and eat sweet green. And so... then we try it again. Next morning, wake up. Now there's a storm in the Northeast. and my 6 a.m. flight gets canceled. Then they're like, okay, fly to Chicago and then try to fly to Newark. So this is my fourth airport, third time zone in a week. And then eventually from Chicago, I get back to Newark. We land in Newark. We fly through the entire blizzard. Like the whole time I'm looking out the window and it's just white. And we land in Newark and the pilot goes, "Welcome to Newark. I have no idea how we were cleared to fly that plane."
All right. Like, so let me ask you this then. That flight was full, right?
It was full, except guess what? There was one empty seat and it was right next to me. I had been stuck in the middle, and then I got the window. It was amazing. That's like
finding a winning lottery ticket when the seat next to you is open.
It is.
Yeah. It was nice. Yeah. I said this to you over text yesterday. I'll say it for everybody else too. I would bet that canceled flight from Newark was Monday, right? Like the one that got canceled that you were talking about, right?
Yeah.
That canceled flight from Newark on Monday, I guarantee you, was probably like 30% full. Right?
Probably.
I mean, a light drizzle will cancel a flight that is not full for these airlines. If the flight is full, they would fly through Hurricane Bob to get to their destination. and if you wanted to like launch into a discussion about analytics, I think this is something else that the nerds have screwed up. I think analytics have told the airlines when to fly and when not to fly and what to cancel and what not to cancel and what to charge people and how to gouge them and all of that different stuff. But I do think that they have all of that down to a science. So there are times when they will use any excuse possible to cancel a flight. And then when it's not financially convenient for them to do that, they will fly through. I mean, they would fly through a tornado to get to their destination. Maybe if they're courteous, try to fly around the tornado, you know?
Yeah.
Just so long as like it didn't delay a flight on the other end that was full.
Well, we're back. That's all that matters. Vegas was
10
good.
Minutes, 10 minutes in and sports writer, travel complaints. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very niche audience complaining about getting to go to the most fun event of the year. But Vegas was great. So I'll start there. I think that I was saying this to someone on the way to the airport. I think that Vegas should be in the every 5 years rotation. I think they earned it. I think everything was great, even on the days. So for those of you who've never been to a Super Bowl, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is great. That week, Thursday,
nobody's there yet.
Cause nobody's there. And you know, the hotels are like $50 a night. Thursday. Whoa, baby. Yeah, you know, and then like everything gets mobbed, just this massive humanity descends upon the Super Bowl. But what's nice about Vegas is Vegas, right? It's just all casinos, and these casinos are casinos, but they're also just giant malls, right?
Yeah,
they're big malls, and so you walk from mall to mall, and you go from bar to bar and restaurant to restaurant, and there's enough there to house whatever, the 200,000 people that the Super Bowl kind of brings in for the event. And although traffic got bad, you and I only waited in traffic the one time. Our bus got stuck once.
And then I tweeted out something that I'm going to apologize for in a second, but keep going.
So I thought logistically, this was a great Super Bowl. And then Allegiant Stadium is right downtown. And so you just walk from the bridge from Mandalay Bay, like right into the Super Bowl. It was great. I thought totally convenient. Vegas, the food scene is really good. I'm not a gambler, but like when I had a couple hours off at the Super Bowl, like the hiking was great. Like it's good. It's a good place. I like it.
I would say, first of all, my apologies on Wednesday. I was pissed off by this traffic situation that Connor referenced. And I said, everybody thought the city was going to be great for the Super Bowl. Traffic's already terrible, and it's only Wednesday. And I was a little upset and a little for a variety of reasons. And Wednesday is sort of hump day of the week anyway. You know what I mean? Like, I know, that's the way people will work Monday to Friday. Look at it. Well, for Super Bowl week, it's the same thing. This one traffic situation we were in, it legitimately took us 45 minutes to make two left turns. So basically we spent 45 minutes in a bus circumventing a city block. And I don't think the bus driver would have been able to let us off because, I mean, I'm sure for like insurance reasons or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Because lawyers ruin everything. But I, you know, like honestly, like top to bottom, like they did a really good job. And, you know, the one thing that's interesting, the one thing that's tough about Vegas, I would say, and the one thing I learned about Vegas, and I think Vegas has really grown. Like it's, I don't know, Connor, like I've been there a handful of times in the past and like I think it's less about gambling than it used to be, you know, kind of because they have to be because it's the novelty's gone because you can gamble everywhere now. But the restaurants and the arenas and the concerts and all that different stuff were great. The one thing that's kind of funny about it was like you could open your Apple Maps on your phone and it could look like something's a 10-minute walk away and it actually takes like 40 minutes. And the reason why is because – and I always sort of knew this in the back of my head, but it sort of it crystallized for me. All these casinos are basically built to trap you. And so it is freaking impossible to find the exit in a lot of these places, you know? So you could be looking on your map on your phone and be like, oh, like that looks like it's like I'm going to go out to dinner here and this is only a 10-minute walk. And it winds up taking you 45 minutes because you're walking out of one casino that's impossible to get out of, and then you're walking into another casino where it's impossible to find something, you know? So
I generally speaking, you know, I mean, we've been to
Not New Orleans, by the way. New Orleans is still number one. And New Orleans is next year, and I think New Orleans puts everyone to shame, and everybody knows how I feel about that, that the Super Bowl and every big event, every big event in America should be held in New Orleans every year, but... And so it's not New Orleans, but yeah, I mean, I think solid B+, and for your first Super Bowl, that's really, really good. They belong in the rotation.
I mean, compared to like Atlanta, where
I thought Atlanta was pretty good.
But Atlanta, were you staying downtown though, or were you?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you were downtown. By Thursday, Atlanta, Atlanta's like a big square, right? And then the downtown, right? And it's very like the traffic and everything is really neatly organized and everything, but by Thursday that square was complete. You couldn't get into town. It was completely gridlocked, you know? And so, and the same with Miami was totally gridlocked.
I thought Houston was bad.
I've never been to Houston.
You weren't at the Houston Super Bowl?
Mm-mm.
That was Patriots Falcons. Weren't you with us by then, or was that
I was at NFL Network, and if there's any Around the NFL podcast listeners that follow our show, which I know there are, that was the Super Bowl where they told me that not only was I not on the Super Bowl trip, but that I had to cover the living hell out of the Pro Bowl in Orlando.
Which would have been great like 10 years earlier when the Pro Bowl was in Hawaii.
But. I did do a Hawaii Pro Bowl, and it was awesome. It was one of the great experiences of my life. But then I got really mad. I was really upset. And then they had me on the podcast, and Dan Hansis wrote a song about how mad I was that I had to be in Orlando. And it was like top.
Can you dig that up and send it to me? That's awesome.
I will. Yeah. He had like, so Sydney was the producer at the time, and he had Sydney sing like backing vocals. Like it was a legitimate song. It was like a 2-minute song.
Oh, like ballad?
I would say it was like a ditty. It was like, Super Bowl snubbed, so he's Connor Orlando today. And I was like, I was so mad. I was so mad that I unfollowed everybody at the company.
He called you Connor Orlando.
They called me Connor Orlando. Yeah. Like I unfollowed everyone at the company.
Were you mad at Hansis in the moment?
Oh, furious. Furious. Furious.
That was the thing about working at NFL Network then, is they held the Super Bowl over everyone and then didn't tell them if they were going or not
until the last minute. Every trip that I had been on, I mean, I love working.
They did that, by the way. By the way, I worked in like a different department than Connor, but they did that to all of us. Like where it was like, it's like the middle of January and you still don't know if you're going to the Super Bowl or not.
I got a call like 2 weeks, like
which is hilarious because the flights go up. So like they didn't save any money by doing this at all.
No.
Right.
Like second week of September, once I got a call, it was like, hey, in a week you gotta go to London for like a week and a half, which was great. I had no complaints. Yeah. And then, but I was just like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
But it was good. All good. I'm very happy. Let's review the Super Bowl a little bit. So I think here's my takeaway. And Mitch Goldich, our former editor, the one of the great humans of all time, he kind of called me out on the groundwork of this take, and so I appreciate that. But so before the game, you watch during pregame, you watch to see what's going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the Chiefs showed up dressed like they were going to Burning Man. Like Travis Kelce was dressed like a disco ball. Isaiah Pacheco was wearing a jacket and just no shirt. Just wasn't right. Wearing a shirt.
That's a look now, I think. Was it Chris Jones was doing that too? One of the other guys was doing that too, yeah.
I can't pull that off. But
it's like a suit with no shirt. Yeah.
Like, yeah,
I can't either.
Ryan Clark did it on ESPN one day. I thought it was like
No, he didn't actually. Like, cause I remember this. Like, I remember thinking.
Did he have
that.
A V-neck on?
Yeah, he had like a flesh colored like turtleneck or something, and everybody thought he was shirtless. And he actually had to go onto Twitter and clarify that he was
he
wearing
did.
A shirt.
Okay, so it wasn't just me. Okay,
right.
Anyway, so the Chiefs show up for pregame warmups, and they're going. I mean. Okay, I'm trying not. I don't love to swear on this show, but they're going bat, you know, crazy.
Yeah.
Like Sky Moore caught like a 2-yard pass in pregame warmups, screamed, jumped in the air, did a double windmill, and slam dunked the ball. And it, like after catching a 2-yard pass, Isaiah Pacheco again had his helmet off. He was like merengue dancing in the end zone. And then you look over at the 49ers, it's like the warm-up's robotic, right? It's just like, bop, 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 bop. And I'm looking, and I'm like, okay, you know. And I tweeted that, and then Mitch, our editor, said, you know, this is the way that everyone can say, you know, win or lose, right? If the 49ers win, you can say the 49ers were taking it more seriously. Or if the Chiefs win, you can say, well, the Chiefs were looser, you know. But combine what the 49ers were, that juxtaposition, combine that with the week, and then the aftermath. And what I mean by that is the week leading up to the Super Bowl, we had the complaints about the field, which were justified. A lot of complaints about the field, complaints about the fire alarms being pulled, again, justified. Mm-hmm. But these 49ers were pissed off all week. They were angry. They were upset. Then after the game, you have already there was an injured offensive lineman who then said it was there was a missed block that one of his teammates was getting blamed for, and then he
Feliciano,
and he said, no, it wasn't this guy, it was the other guy, and then the other guy gets on, and he's like, he said his feelings were hurt.
So it was some combination of Feliciano and Banks. It was something like that, right? Like, I can't remember exactly who was who on that whole thing, but...
Right. Yeah. So, and then you have Kyle Shanahan, who I have all the sympathy for in the world. I really do think this is not an enviable position, but basically everyone asking him like, hey, this keeps happening. And his response is, it's Mahomes and Brady. What are you going to do? So could you take all of that and put that under the umbrella of Reed had his guys a little bit looser and a little bit more prepared?
Yeah. I mean, I think the psychology of this one's really interesting just because, and we talked about this last week, I think, didn't we? Like where, it's the effect that Mahomes has on people. And it's, and I think I actually said this last week, like if you go into the fourth quarter up, like where's your head at? Right? Like, and are you waiting for the other shoe to drop?
Right.
And I just think that there's so much of that goes into playing one of these quarterbacks. And, you know, my buddy Mike Silver came up with the right term for it. He said that, like, it's hard to blame Kyle for this. He got Mahomes'd. You know what I mean? Like, and it's, I do think like the psychology of having a quarterback like that and the psychology of going against a quarterback like that can play into these things. And Kyle actually like conceded it. Like there was that fourth down that they went for. I think at that point they were down 13-10, right? Like it was fourth and whatever. And they could have easily kicked the field goal there. Fourth and three, I think. And then they threw that little flat route out to Kittle, and he reaches over to pick it up, right?
Yes. That was a fourth and four, yeah.
Yeah, Kyle, if I'm not mistaken, said
third
after the game.
Third and four.
Right, Sorry. Like, I thought it was a fourth and four, no?
No, that was a...
That was a third down. Okay.
Oh, no. That was a fourth. We're talking about two different plays. You're right. There was a fourth and three. Yes.
Right. So I think that, like, and Kyle conceded there, like, I went for it because Mahomes is on the other side.
Right.
You know, so it can seep into every bit of your psychology, you know? And I mean, look, like, I think most of us would look at this and say, well, the pregame warmups would maybe dictate how you play at the beginning of the game. And the Niners kicked the Chiefs' ass at the beginning of the game. Like, I think it was, at one point, wasn't the yardage like 125-16 or something?
Yeah.
So as far as like who was more ready to go, it would be hard to say the Niners weren't the team that was more ready to go based on how the game started. But if you want to like kind of like dig deeper into that, right? You really, really dig into it and look at it and examine it. That looseness and the kind of dialed in-ness of the Niners, right? Like maybe that does play into the fourth quarter and overtime and how you approach everything. And, you know, that belief on the Chiefs side that, you know, Mahomes is going to lead us out of the fire. And maybe that worry, if you're going up against Mahomes, that at some point the other shoe is going to drop. And I kind of think about being up in that press box, Connor, and like when the Niners kicked the field goal in overtime, I couldn't help but think the game's over. It sort of felt to me like when the Patriots won the toss in the Falcons-Patriots Super Bowl, right? Like when the Patriots won that toss, you're like, oh yeah, it's over,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, it kind of felt the same way.
Do you want to know when I thought the game was over? So I'm looking it up right now. And this is when, so for those of you who don't know, when you're a sports writer and you're covering an event, right, you have to have something online the second the game is over. One of the people in your group have to have something online the second is over.
Connor was that person. I was sitting next to him and I felt bad for him because he couldn't. It sucks because you really, and we've all been in that spot. It sucks because you can't really watch the end of the game fully.
Right. I mean, and that's what was kind of nice about being stuck in the hotel on Monday is I actually got to see the third and the fourth, most of the third and the fourth quarter. So when I started writing was, it was, let's see here.
I'm actually going to go back. I watched the condensed on the plane home and I'm going to go back today after I get my mailbag done, and I'm going to actually watch the broadcast of the fourth quarter and overtime. Because I think actually watching the condensed, you don't get the full thing. You know what I mean?
Right, right. So I had two docs up. 49ers win, 49ers lose. And so 49ers win, I had been making notes throughout the game about, especially some of the, you know, all game you could see what Kyle Shanahan was doing, right? He's setting up these little things, and you're like, God, it's going to be, he's going to have a deep shot dialed up here off of one of these things. It's going to happen. Okay, here's when I thought it wasn't going to happen, and here's when I started working on the Chiefs win, Doc. Okay, right after the second quarter, start of the third quarter, Patrick Mahomes gets intercepted, and then the 49ers get the ball. They're up 10-3. This is the chance to completely step on their necks and put
you
them
said
out
second quarter, third quarter.
Third quarter, sorry, yeah. First drive after the interception, three plays, negative 1 yard, 59 seconds off the clock. The defense holds the 49ers, right? On the next drive, or the defense holds the Chiefs on the next drive. Okay, so the 49ers get another shot to put the game out of reach, step on their necks. Three plays, again, negative 1 yard, less than 2 minutes off the clock. Then, following drive, the Chiefs come back and they kick a field goal. It's 10-6. I'm like, it's over. It's done. Like, it's already
happened.
So,
Connor, let's dive into that a little further, okay? Through that stretch, right, everything that could go wrong for the Chiefs did go wrong, right? They fumble the first play, which puts them in a situation where they wind up getting intercepted. They force the Niners to punt. The Niners down that punt at the 2.
Yep.
Right? So there were all these little things beyond just what you're talking about that created opportunity. And I had an executive from another team reach out to me and point this out to me, right? So the Niners started their first three possessions of the second half, right? Three and out, three and out, three and out. I'll take you through the calls there. Pass, pass, scramble, right? So another pass call. Pass, pass, pass. Run, pass, pass.
Yeah.
I think that that's where the real criticism is. I think that that's where criticism is fair.
Right.
Like in that situation, giving up what you gave up to get Christian McCaffrey, why aren't you going to him there? You can run the ball on this team. Why aren't you going to him there? And I think part of it is the genius of Steve Spagnuolo, to be honest with you. But go ahead and tell me why you think the game was over there.
I at that point, I don't know. It's personal to a man, right? But I'm convinced that you can feel that. I think that you can feel a game shift. And in that moment, it
locked
in. Like
this was their chance.
Like that was it. You know, and you can go back to previous Super Bowls. And I hate to do this because I do think Kyle is agonizing over this, certainly. And I don't want to, you know, a narrative is too simple, right? That he can't win big games is false. He's won a lot of big games in his career. He just hasn't won the Super Bowl. But in those Super Bowls, there has always been that moment where it's like, okay, this is the drive, and it's not in the fourth quarter. It's always like in the middle of the third quarter where this is it. You can cut the head off the chicken. This is it. And it doesn't happen. And when it doesn't happen, you know, the other team just kind of seizes on that. And I hate like analytics. People will roast me for this. There's no such thing as momentum. There's no such thing as this. I get it. I guess
there is,
but there is it's palpable. Anybody,
I hate that because everybody who's played a sport in their life, right? From the time you're 5 years old, you know the nerves that go into it. You know, no matter how good or bad you are at a sport, you know what it feels like when you're really rolling. You know what it feels like when it feels like the sky is falling, right? Like that doesn't change. Like that's, I mean, momentum exists. The only reason they say there's no momentum, and again, like I think analytics are very useful, but the only reason they say that is because they can't put a number on it.
Right. And I could feel it. Like, I could just feel it in my gut. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's my job to have this thing ready, right? And so I'm like, I was like, we're abandoning the 49ers win the Super Bowl copy because it's not happening. And even, you know, they had a couple impressive drives down the stretch, but it was always like the Chiefs got this. I mean, I knew it. I felt it. I knew it was over at that point.
I just think like, and you look at it like, I think choke is a bad word here.
Yeah, it's a tough word. Yeah.
Choke, like, because I don't think, like, I think this is just, I mean, people are going to kind of conflate it with what happened with the Falcons in 2016. I don't think that's fair at all. I think you can certainly question the play calling, the decision making during that stretch that you're talking about. But the fact is the Niners dug themselves out after that. And like they played pretty well in the fourth quarter and they scored in overtime. And there are some other things later in the game that we can get to. But if this was a choke, they would have collapsed after that third quarter.
Yeah.
Right?
They scored a lot of, I think they scored more points after that than before that or just as many. Yeah.
Right. I mean, like they like dug themselves out and then their last three possessions, touchdown, field goal. Do they have? Yeah, touchdown. Oh, all right. So they had a touchdown and a field goal in the fourth quarter. And then they had a fourth. And then again, they had a field goal in overtime. So they scored on their last three possessions. I do think the game management part of this is worth examining, you know? And I always thought, like, this is what some of the defensive head coaches do really well. You know, I think knowing that your defense is as worn out as it is, and I think Kyle did. Like, that's part of the reason Kyle said he took the ball at the beginning of overtime. But there was certainly some, like, game management questions here. But, I don't think you can call it a choke, you know? I look at it like, again, if it's choking in the purest sense, right? Like, that momentum thing. If it's coming undone because you're chicken littling the situation, then you would have fallen apart after the third quarter, and they didn't.
Right. Yeah. Which is why I was trying to think about who would you put this on? And it's unfair to do. It's unfair to like Christian McCaffrey after the game was like, it's my fault. I fumbled in the first quarter. No, I mean, that's like, yeah. That was like Jalen Hurts blamed himself for the Super Bowl loss last year. That one mistake is not changing the course of the game. And he scored a touchdown, made up for it. I mean, I don't know who you put it on.
I think both teams played really well in the fourth quarter.
Like, I think it was a well played Super Bowl. Yeah.
Right. Like, I think in the fourth quarter in overtime, I look at it like the Chiefs got scored on every time, right? But Chris Jones made that play at the end of the game to hurry Brock Purdy, right? And force the field goal. So can you say the Chiefs got... No, the Chiefs defense played really well considering the circumstances, even though they got scored on every time they went out there in the fourth quarter in overtime. Did the Niners defense play poorly? Or did they just get Mahomes'd?
I think the defense got Mahomes'd.
The Niners defense like got a stop at the end to force overtime, right? They got, I'm looking at it now, two red zone stops. At least two red zone stops in the fourth quarter. And really, like, the only touchdown that the Chiefs scored during regulation was in what came after the muff punt.
Right.
So can you put this in the Niners defense? I don't know. I just like look at it like the end of that game was really well played. And it was, I think, in a lot of ways, a sport at the highest level, you know?
Yes.
Like, it was a really, really well played game.
I was thinking, could you theoretically put it on a combination? Here's where I would land on it. I think I could theoretically put it on a combination of Kyle and the offense and the 49ers offensive line. But again, there were injuries. Yeah. But there were guys coming unblocked. There were guys like George Karlaftis who were having the best games maybe of the season against this offensive line. Could you put it on?
I don't know. Here's where I think Spagnuolo deserves credit, right? So the Niners finished the game with 31 rushing attempts. Did it feel like they ran the ball 31 times?
No.
Right? And then I took you through that sequence there where 9 plays, there was one run call, right? In that critical situation. And then go back 2 weeks. How many times did the Ravens run it against the Chiefs? 18 times.
Right. Yeah.
Which is like half of like their normal, their average of rush attempts for the year. So Steve Spagnuolo has a way of influencing you to do things you don't want to do. And I think a part of it, like he took me through this after the game, what they'd done. And so I think you and I had talked about this, right? Like where we were talking about during the game in the press box where, and you were smart to bring this up, how the Chiefs kept matching personnel, mm-hmm. right? Like, so like the Niners base offense came out, the Chiefs base defense would come out. And Niners go with, 11 personnel, the Chiefs bring out their nickel. So Spags told me that he stopped doing that at the end of the second quarter. And so he brought his nickel out, right? And the way he explained it to me was, he was like, I brought the nickel out, and he's like, and then I put a lot on my corners. So he put a lot on, Snead and McDuffie in particular, and then Watson, and he said the reason why was because like what I'm trying to do is Brock Purdy was tearing apart their zones, and Brock Purdy and Kyle Shanahan were too good at attacking their zones, and so it's like okay, like so we're gonna play way more man, and we're gonna put it on the corners to cover. And we're going to play nickel fronts, and we're going to run blitz. And so they are influencing. They are influencing the Niners to throw the ball. Because if you aren't giving them gaps to run into, then the Niners are going to look at that and say, we have to throw. Which is exactly what happened with the Ravens.
Yeah.
Right? And I just think it's something that won't show up in any stat sheet. But it's like, how can you influence the defense? How can you influence the offense to do something it doesn't want to do? And I think it's a credit to the Niners they played as well as they did down the stretch, because I do think like Spags' scheme forced them to play left-handed. And I think it wound up hurting them in the red zone, right? Like, because now it's harder to go back to the run game and everything else. But I thought it was a masterful game from Steve Spagnuolo. And I mean, I think if you look back at the last, you know, four games, the four playoff games, I mean, one of the great stretches by a defensive coach I can remember in a playoff setting.
Do you want to hear two wild Spag stats?
Yeah.
All right. Here, these are, even though we all know, I think these are going to blow your mind. So the 49ers faced four of the top six offenses in the NFL in the playoffs. Combined, going into that game, those four offenses averaged 28.5 points a game against the Chiefs, 12.6. Okay? And here's the other one. This one is amazing. And say what you will, so Football Outsiders has a stat called DVOA. It's called Defensive Value Over Average. I believe it's defense adjusted value over average, right? So how good are these teams based on a lot of conditional factors, right? The defenses they're playing, how they succeed, not in garbage time. A lot of stuff is taken into account, right? So the three best teams to make the Super Bowl over, like, this list goes back to 1983, at least the three best teams, offensive teams, to make the Super Bowl in terms of DVOA: the 2007 New England Patriots, the 2023 San Francisco 49ers, the 2019 San Francisco 49ers. All three of those teams were beaten by Steve Spagnuolo in the Super Bowl. What?
That's amazing. That's incredible.
He beat, like, the three best offenses. Now, again, this is one way of quantifying it, but he beat the three best offenses. It's just ridiculous.
I think, like, honestly, it's, I know he's 64. I know he's a defensive coach. But it's just like, can the guy get an interview? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not even talking about can the guy get an interview?
Yeah.
If you were another team, wouldn't you want to just talk to him? Like, how the hell did you pull this off?
It's crazy.
And here's the thing about it, too. Like, this year's Chief defense, how young are they?
Right. I mean, outside of Chris
all
Jones.
Guys, it's, yeah, all guys Spags developed, too. Like, right, that's the other part of it. I mean, outside of Chris Jones, like, who obviously is an all-time great and you can't take him out of the equation, but, I mean, go right on down the list. George Karloftis, Nick Bolton, Willie Gay, Trent McDuffie, L'Jarius Sneed, Justin Reed's obviously from the outside, but almost all of the guys that were out there are guys that were developed by Spags, right?
Yeah.
So, like, just drafting, developing, scheming, like, it, like, I don't know why you wouldn't want to talk to the guy. Even if you didn't intend on hiring him, I would just want to get him in the room and be like, tell me what you did, you know?
Yeah. How does that work?
Yeah.
And you know, Spags was a head coach at one point, but you can go back and you can look at all that stuff, right? Whether it had something to do with, you know, the quarterback at the time or the team. Well,
Did you see Kevin Demoff's tweet?
No.
Okay, so this was, hold on, I'm going to look it up really
Kevin
quick.
Kevin Demoff is the COO of the Los Angeles Rams.
Of the Los Angeles Rams, and was the COO of the St. Louis Rams when Spags was the head coach there. And here's what he said. He actually tweeted a lot about it yesterday. It is well past time to see Spags get another head coaching opportunity. The team and organization he inherited in St. Louis was a mess. Nobody could have had success. Yet he changed the culture, staff, and players believed. An amazing human deserving of the real shot we couldn't give him.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, that's the guy who hired him and fired him in St. Louis.
I really messed this thing up, and yeah.
It was not him. Like, he's basically saying, and credit to Kevin for doing it, you know? But this is the guy who hired Sean McVay also, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know why, like, I don't know why you wouldn't want to at least talk to him.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens a lot, right? There's a little bit of ageism there. Maybe he could have a late kind of Bruce Arians swoon.
Well, he checks every box of, like, that's the problem, is that he checks every box of, like, what teams what won't let you win the press conference? You know what I mean? Like defense, older, all of it. Like, so, like, you know, a lot of these owners are really worried about superficial things like, you know, what's the local sports radio station going to say the next day? Stuff that doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, or like, are we going to be the team that gets a D on the, on Connor Orr's post-hiring cycle grades?
It's so funny if that is ever taken into consideration. What's that guy think? Literally in his basement. So what do you think that the 49ers do from here? Because we know what the Chiefs are going to do from here. They're just going to go win another Super Bowl.
Yeah.
San Francisco, I mean, you got a lot of impending free agents. I thought Mike Florio brought up a good point that I feel like I was the first one to make this comparison, and I've since seen it made other places. I rarely do this, but I think this was a Connor Orr original. I think the Kyle Shanahan and Andy Reid comparisons are so apt. They were both offensive gurus. They both had a lot of high profile failures until they got into the right situation. Does Kyle need to get himself into a different situation? Or is it, do you need to get a different quarterback? Even though Brock Purdy played really well, really, really well in the Super Bowl.
No, because you can't snap your fingers and make Patrick Holmes appear. I mean, remember where the Chiefs were.
You could make Kirk Cousins appear.
Right, but I mean, is that going to really, does that make your situation markedly better?
That's what I'm asking.
You know, like, I mean, like, it took Alex Smith in Kansas City for Andy Reid to get to Patrick Mahomes. And at the very least, Brock Purdy can be that guy for you, right? Like, they can get you to the next guy. And I do think, like, I think the problem is this becomes such a black and white, like, yes or no question for people. Like, either he is or he isn't, you know? We'll dive into it next on First Take. Like, I don't think, like, these aren't yes or no questions. Like, there are shades of gray. So, would you like to have, you know, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen? Of course you would. You'd love to have that. But, like, you can't snap your... There aren't 30 of those guys, you know? And it, like, history tells us that it's, like, you can have a quarterback who's a little bit less than that that gets you to the quarterback, like what the Chiefs did with Alex Smith being competitive and buying them time to find the Patrick Mahomes. So I think that, like, the Brock Purdy questions are a little absurd. They have him super cheap again next year. Then they'll have to make a decision on him contractually. I think the bigger questions for the Niners right now are the rest of the roster. And I think this is why they don't make a run at Kirk Cousins, because Brock Purdy at whatever he's going to make next year, like $2 or $3 million, is completely different than Kirk Cousins at $40 or $50 million.
Right.
So I have this from my story on Monday. The Niners have 8 players right now. So this is the amazing thing. I think we talked about this last week. The highest cap, would you like to venture a guess, Connor, on what the highest cap number for the Niners was this year?
Was it Bosa?
No.
Was it Debo?
No.
It
was Trent Williams.
Oh,
you
want to
guess what that? You want to guess what that number was?
The cap number, not the annual
the cap
salary.
Number. Not no, the cap number.
It was less. Was it less than 20?
Yep.
Like 18, 19, something like that.
12.5.
Woo! Golly. So,
I mean, think about that. Like, now, for the people out there, you know what that, Connor, what does that mean?
That means that the bills is coming due.
That means you mortgaged, right? Which they should have done. They have 8 players in their roster making $15 million per year or more. And that's not including, like, what Ayuk is going to make next year, right? So those numbers change this coming year. So next year, they have 8 guys, right, on their roster. 8 guys the 8 guys who are making $15 million per year or more, their cap charge for those 8 players alone is $198 million, so almost $200 million for those 8. So that's an average cap number of $25 million per. So it's double what the highest cap number was this year. And then you add in Brandon Ayuk's fifth-year option, and that's 9 players gets you to $212 million. So now you're probably around $30 million. You're around $30 million under the salary cap for next year, right? With 44 spots to fill on your roster.
Woof.
Yeah. So, like, there are real questions here. Like, how do you creatively manage this? And the Niners once managed this, right, by trading DeForest Buckner. They once had this sort of situation where they looked at it and they said, we're paying Eric Armstead. We have Nick Bosa, and we're going to have to pay him. It has to give somewhere, so they traded DeForest Buckner. I think they're going to trade somebody. I don't know who it is. Maybe it's Ayuk, but I think they're going to trade somebody. And maybe they trade more than one person. But, you know, I look at where they're at, and yes, you can kick the can down the road for another year. But, I mean, I don't know where. So put it this way, right? So I gave you the eight guys, right? The top nine figures, their top nine cap figures for 2025, right? Their top nine cap figures for 2 years from now add up to $194 million. And two of those nine are dead money charges and dummy years on contracts. So two guys who aren't even scheduled to be on their roster in 25. So at some point, this has to give. Now, do you want to kind of keep rolling with this team and then 2 years from now you're doing a complete teardown where you're hitting a hard reset, and we've seen teams do this before, and just starting all over again? Or do you want to gradually start to work guys off the roster? So if you're another team and you're calling on Deebo Samuel, I think that the Niners maybe listen. If you're another team and you're calling on, I hesitate to say Fred Warner because he's been like kind of like a heartbeat player for that team.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, like, I think at some point, like, I think there's going to come a point in the next couple of weeks where you're going to start hearing about them trading one, maybe two of their star players to try and make what they've built sustainable.
Here's my thought. And granted, this hasn't proven out to win a Super Bowl for them, but I think that Kyle is a really smart schematic head coach. I think the team was at its absolute best when Kyle was complemented by a true, like, culture guy. So he had Robert Saleh there. And when Saleh was there, and you could say whatever you want about Saleh's time as the head coach of the Jets. I mean, he needs to win, and there's no doubt. But Saleh was the one coming up with all the stuff, right? All gas, no brakes. This is how we play. He was the guy that was chest thumping everybody and beating, and, you know, and going bonkers, right? You know, every game, you know, he would be on the camera more than Shanahan would be on the camera. And I do think that Kyle needs that guy. I mean, he had Anthony and Lynn.
D'Amico.
Like D'Amico, exactly. And he had Anthony Lynn this year. He had Steve Wilkes, which again, you know, but I, you know, Anthony Lynn is now gone. Anthony Lynn's with the Commanders. Steve Spagnuolo, by the way, while we were taping this podcast, just signed a contract extension. So that was a smart for the Chiefs to do that. But I think as he's retooling his staff, I think Kyle needs to bring in a few clubhouse guys, and he needs to bring in a clubhouse coach.
Yeah,
because the way that he runs his organization, it produces so much in terms of innovation and like a valuable product for the offense. But I think what it lacks is that, whatever you want to call it, that overarching personality, that attitude, that looseness, that intensity. And so what you need is your Saleh, you need your D'Amico, you need somebody to come in and be the oil to the water, you know?
Yeah, and I think, like, Anthony Lynn being there helps. I think, you know,
was there. He's gone.
Was there, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just sort of, like, look at it, like, how do you find that guy and how do you fill it out on your staff? And, you know, I do think, you know, the other part of this, too, is if you bring in that guy, can that guy help you with game management? And I think that this is something, again, that people don't talk about as much with, you know, like, head coach hirings. because game management is boring. And again, it's another one of those things that's probably hard to put a number on. So, you know, an owner's analytic, and I don't want to turn this into the anti-analytics podcast, but it's like, that's something like that an owner's analytics guy is probably going to look less at, you know. But I do think, like, you see that sometimes with the offensive play caller head coaches. Andy Reid had a lot of game management problems when he was in Philadelphia, right? And I just think, you know, having that guy who can really help in that area would be big. So who is that guy? Is there somebody out there with all of these ex-players getting jobs? Is there somebody like that maybe that can help you in that area? Could you convince Mike Vrabel to go there as your assistant head coach?
Ooh.
He's excellent at game management. And you say to Mike Vrabel, come here.
For a year.
Right. You'll get to know all of my young assistants, my young offensive assistants, right? I want you to help be our culture guy. I want you to help continue to instill toughness into our program, which we've already got. And I want you to help me with game management. And I want you to help our players with the rules. That's one thing Mike is very good at, is the rules, right? And it would be, I think, a chance for Mike to go in and see from the inside what one of the best organizations in sports, and I believe that, one of the best organizations in sports does. I don't know, man. I kind of like the idea of it, don't you?
I do. Man. Woo! That's fun.
I mean, a chance to go for Mike Vrabel, a chance to go try to win a ring, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it just, I that would make all the sense in the world. Because I think, like, wherever, I think Kyle's one of the five best head coaches in the league. And if I had every coach available to me in the NFL right now, and you said to me, pick one guy for the next 10 years, it might be Kyle, right? Like Kyle or McVay. I think those guys are both in the same category. But like, if there are like little areas like where he can get better, I think Mike Vrabel's like the guy who would help there. So I don't know. Maybe you couldn't convince him to do it, but if I'm Kyle, I would make that phone call 100%.
Let's close with just one thing that you're looking forward to here over the next few weeks. I know we got the combine coming up. We got a lot of stuff happening. What's on your radar coming up here?
Yeah, I think, I think like the thing that we just talked about, which is like, where are the big trades going to happen? There are teams that are that are leveraged here, and so I think like some of the best teams in the league have some big decisions to make. In fact, like I think if you look at like the four conference finalists, the team that has the best chance to come back intact, I think by far, is Detroit. Right?
I have a Detroit Bengals Super Bowl next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think Detroit comes back. I think Detroit has the best chance to come back intact. Right? Like, and still be ascending coming out of all of this. So what do the Ravens do about Matabuke and Queen, right? Like those are two huge pieces for them on defense. How do they find a way to keep both of those guys? I think that's a massive question, especially like you look at, you know, their linebacker position, they already paid Roquan. So what do the Ravens do? What do the Chiefs do with Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed? Sneed was one of the best players in that team this year. Sneed could probably command a $20 million contract out there on the market. I have a hard time seeing where they hold on to both of those guys. Maybe they can find a way. San Francisco, do they trade one of their stars away? I think that those, like, I think as far as like where we're at, like, and just kind of the way teams have built and that idea of leveraging it, and it's like sort of the Rams effect, right? Like the Rams over leveraged, win a championship, and then they just had their reset year. And they've shown it can work, right? Because their reset year, they made the playoffs. I think because teams are building that way more commonly now, you're seeing it more often where the great teams go into the offseason with massive questions. And so for three of the four teams in the conference championship games, I think we can very fairly say there's going to be a star or two that's not going to be there next year.
Yeah.
So I think that that would be the biggest thing. It's like, what happens to those guys, right? What happens to Chris Jones? What happens to L'Jarius Sneed? Is there a star the Niners trade? Do they trade Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel? I could see them trading one or the other, right? Juwan Jennings is a restricted free agent. What do they do with him? Does somebody sign him to an offer sheet? You know, and then, you know, and then with, who did I miss there? I said, did I go through the Ravens? I went through the Niners. I went through. I'm brain dead right now, Connor. I think the season's worn on me.
Too much time at the blackjack.
Oh, no. I mentioned Sneed and I mentioned Jones. Yeah. So, yeah.
You're good.
So, the Ravens, like Matabuke, I think Matabuke has got a chance to make to score big in free agency, and Patrick Queen, too. So, you know, like those are two, like, heart and soul players for that Baltimore defense that's already losing Mike McDonald. What does Baltimore do there? I think with these great teams, with these final four teams, there are big questions, the exception being Detroit, where I think Detroit can probably bring back everybody or almost everyone and make another run at it in 2024.
I'm looking forward to I can't wait for the quarterback. You know, we call it stock rising and stock falling, even though it's
the Caleb Drake.
Oh, it's going to be so good. Oh, Race. Gosh. Like, and then, you know what I'm really looking forward to? When the Bears keep Justin Fields and draft a quarterback like I've been saying they should do for 6 months, and everyone turns around and says, that's crazy. Who's been talking about it? This guy right here.
I think we can already forecast some of the things too. Like I remember saying last year, like get ready because we're going to be talking about Bryce Young's weigh-in at the combine ad nauseum, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll put one on your radar now. I think we're going to be talking a lot about Caleb Williams' fingernails over the next 2 months.
Caleb Williams, you know about that? Fingernails? No.
Do you know? Like, so he paints his fingernails, right? Like, he's painted his fingernails before games. I can't remember his mom or his whatever. Someone does it for him. And I guess he's always done it, but it became really well known before the Pac-12 championship game the year he won the Heisman. So last year, 22, right? Because he had, and I won't swear, F-U-C-K on one and then Utah on the other.
Whoa.
So I just say the fingernail thing because we're all going to be talking about how different a personality he is. We're all going to be breaking down his makeup and all of that different stuff and jumping in the crowd and, you know, like crying with his mom when he lost that game. And get ready for a lot of amateur shrinks breaking down Caleb Williams' makeup over the next 2.5 months. The thing that kind of like for me that gets me through all of that and like helps me cut through all of that, because I think this is the most important thing, is that the people who have come through that program, the players, the coaches that have gone through USC, all seem to love him, which I think is the most important thing. But there's a lot to dig through there for teams. And I think the teams start digging through it. Obviously, a lot of that will seep out into the public discussion on Caleb Williams as well.
Oh,
so buckle up, Connor. Buckle up. Fingernail talk.
I've been making a lot of Chris Collinsworth noises during this podcast, by the way. Oh! But yeah, it's true.
And Jaden Daniels' weigh-in will be important. And then I think we'll talk about Drake May. What exactly went wrong last year? Like, because maybe it felt like to some people like he was great as a redshirt freshman, and he was really good as a redshirt sophomore. But why did he take a little bit of a step back? It's like the Sam Howell, another North Carolina quarterback, the Sam Howell discussion, right? Remember Sam Howell, his first year as a, you know, when he was a sophomore, I don't know if it was his first year as a full-time starter, I think it was, played great. And then they lost like Javonte Williams and Michael Carter and Dyami Brown and all these other guys. And they basically turned him into Tim Tebow his junior year. And his draft stock fell. And so I think we're going to have a similar conversation on Drake May. Not that he's going to fall to the fifth round. I don't think he'll fall, but I think his range is 2 to 3 in this year's draft, like second or third pick. But I think there will be a lot of discussion on Drake May and why 2023 wasn't quite what 2022 was for him, which I guess you could have a similar conversation with Caleb Williams as well. Jaden Daniels obviously being the opposite of that. So there you go. There's my draft minute.
Buckle up, everybody. Albert and I just got home. We're going back to the combine. Our families are still trying to piece together.
Yeah, Connor got a nice little preview of the scene in Indy there over the last 48 hours.
The airport is a basketball court right now, like a full-on NBA-sized basketball court. You know when you get through security and you go to like that area with like the Chick-fil-A?
Yeah.
That is legitimately a full-size basketball court right now. Because of the NBA
really?
All-Star game. Yeah, the All-Star game's there.
So there's a full-size, like an actual
full-size, yeah, I'm not even kidding.
Can you play?
I think so.
Like there are balls and everything?
I didn't see any balls, but like why would you put it there if you couldn't? But then again, it would probably be like a security issue if you tried to fire a shot and then it goes down the
escalator.
So it's
like if you're walking into security, then you'd be going to the left side was where that food court is, right? The opposite side from Harry and Izzy's. Because
Harry and Izzy's is past security. This is before security.
Oh, this is before security.
You know what I'm saying?
In that big circle area.
Yeah.
Wow, I wonder if it'll still be there. So the All-Star weekend is this coming weekend for the NBA, right?
I think so.
I wonder if it'll still be there for the combine. Well, it should be. No, because I hope it is.
I took a picture. I'll send it to you.
Okay.
And if it is, we'll time our flights. I'm not gonna use the
play a little one on one.
Yeah, I was gonna say we'll see if Albert can body me.
How do you think people would react to the two of us like in gym gear, like just like having a super intense game where we're yelling at each other,
dressed like Woody Harrelson from White Men Can't Jump, and just yeah, really really getting into it. Yeah, no, I'm
headband, like yeah.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I'm not going to use that travel site. I'm just going to book through United like I should have.
Beware of those Australian fruits.
Yeah. If anyone has any other questions for me on that, happy to answer offline. That's Albert Breer. Thank you so much for listening. As always, Matt and Gilberto Thursday to recap the Super Bowl. And you guys can ask Gilberto if he ended up jumping in the pool at our Airbnb in Vegas. I'll leave that as a cliffhanger. And Albert and I will be back on the normal schedule next week, and we'll get you guys ready for the draft.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.